So this Sunday is traditionally known as Christ the King Sunday, to look at the nature of how Christ is King. But it is also today a day which is remembered as Violence or Women Against Violence Sunday. And so I want to try and link some of those thoughts about that. One in three women worldwide experience physical or sexual violence. One in three. That's the estimate over time. That's an amazing figure. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 women in here today. Now, some places may be slightly different. But if 13 women in here today, that would mean that four of you potentially will have been abused at some stage in your life or had violence, experienced violence against your person. That's horrifying, isn't it, when we look at numbers in that way? Violence against women and girls grew during COVID lockdown because of the ability of people to be violent in the safety, if you like, of their own home without other people being able to interact with the people who are being abused. The outbreak of COVID saw that rise, but it's not stopped. All types of violence against women and girls, particularly domestic violence, has increased. So let me read you a poem written by someone. I can't find the source of it, but it's called Getting Flowers. We had our first argument last night, and he said a lot of cruel things that really hurt me. But I know he's sorry and didn't mean the things he said because he sent me flowers today. It wasn't our anniversary or any other special day. Last night he threw me into a wall and started to choke me. It seemed like a nightmare. I couldn't believe it was real. I woke up this morning sore and bruised all over. But I know he must be sorry because he sent me flowers today. I got flowers today, and it wasn't Mother's Day or any other special day. Last night, he beat me up again. It was much worse than all the other times. If I leave him, what will I do? How will I take care of my kids? What about money? I'm afraid of him and scared to leave. But I know he must be sorry because he sent me flowers today. I got flowers today. Today was a very special day. It was the day of my funeral. Last night he finally killed me. He beat me to death. If only I had gathered enough courage to leave him, I would not have got flowers today. When you read things like that, it hits hard, doesn't it? And it asks kind of questions about the way we live and about the things that people believe. When we talk about Christ the King, it asks questions about what do we believe about the way people rule over others, the nature of kingship. in the gospel passage, we see two very different forms of that ruling over others, that kind of kingship. We see the way of Rome, Pax Romana, the peace that comes from Rome. Peace as long as you do what you're told, as long as you obey us and the rules that we impose. As long as you do that, then you will have peace. But speak up against us, ask us questions about the way we are, then you'll feel the other way that we will make sure there is peace. And then we have in one of Jesus' replies, the other way. For Jesus says, my kingdom's not like that. If it were, my followers would be rising up against, and they too would be fighting to save me. Fighting, using the way of violence. But that is not my way. That is not what my followers will do. But this picture of kingship, of ruling, of leading others, that's one of violence that backs up power, is one that we've seen not just in the times of Jesus, the ways of Rome, but all the way down through the ages. I know some of you, like me in that sense, are watching Wolf Hall series about Cromwell and King Henry VIII. A model of kingship. And one who takes over supreme authority of a church. I wonder at times whether any person of peace kind of thinks that the way of church includes this way of violence that was perpetrated and still has been and is in the name of the church. But Jesus talks about this different picture of kingdom. Some, rather than using the word kingdom with a G, have taken out the G to use the word kindom. This idea of how all are equal, how we are all kin. Jesus calls us friends, not servants. He takes out some of this hierarchical model that there is, that we should be sisters and brothers, not lords and servants or serfs. And he showed in the way that he was and in the things he taught that his was a way of servant leadership, of serving others, of caring for them with a compassion which was far-reaching and transforming. And it's that role that we are called to emulate, to follow, to build a world, to build societies and communities where the least is treated as the greatest. So God's kingdom is one where truth, life, right relationships are valued. And we see that not just in this passage where he talks about God's kingdom, but throughout his teaching. On the road to Jerusalem, where he tells his disciples off time and time again for them not understanding, when they ask him, well, can we sit at your right hand or your left? Who will be the greatest in the kingdom? And Jesus says, have you not heard? The least will be the greatest. The child amongst you will be at the forefront. A totally different standard where he subverts the notion of status of one over another. And I think we have a real need in the church to separate the idea in some way of Christ the King and of Jesus who came to show us the way. My former principal, when I was at theological college, wrote a hymn which is in our hymn books called Christ the King Before Creation. A reminder that Christ the King is the one who is there at the beginning. As all is created, that presence, that Christ is always there. But how do we experience that Christ? We experience it so much through each other, through the way that the incarnation happens. Not an incarnation that happens in just one man called Jesus some 2,000 years ago, but the incarnation that happens when any of us open our hearts to take Christ in, to lay aside, to put aside our own ego, that we may take that ego of Christ, God's ego, into our hearts, that we allow the Christ to be born in us, that we may become more Christ-like in our living day by day. When we let that Christ be our King, then it is that status doesn't matter anymore. Just being the best we can be, the best people we can be, caring, loving, sharing in all the ways that we can. Jesus shows us that that way of rule is where the love of power is replaced by the power of love. And we see this wisdom, don't we, at the heart of the gospel. But not just the heart of the gospel, the heart of the way of living, which is advocated by all sorts of different faith traditions, by all sorts of groups of people, whether they have faith or not. We call it the golden rule. Treat others as you would want to be treated is a positive way of saying it. Or don't do to others what you don't want done to you is a more negative way. And I've deliberately not used the words that Jesus uses for it. Love. Love one another. For love is a word that in the kind of situation of abuse, as we've heard in that poem, love is a word that is abused and used as an excuse for abuse. We need to be careful. Careful sometimes of how love can be pictured and how it can be used by people to get their own way, to not think of others, but only of themselves. It's why I'm so pleased, and although we're not going to sing it today, that one of the hymns in our hymn book is number 615. 615, Let Love Be Real. For the words in that hymn speak of a love which doesn't manipulate, a love which helps and supports, a love that forgives and helps all move on, a love that transforms, a love that doesn't seek its own desire, its own way, but wants the best for others. when love is like that, then people can grow. People can find new life. We see it in countless stories where Jesus encounters people, and the compassion that he shows changes their situation. On Thursday, at our prayers, we were thinking a little bit about the story of the woman caught in adultery, a woman to whom violence was being done, a woman who's left standing on her own, even though there probably was a man involved. Where is he? A woman who's standing in front of a violent crowd calling for her death. A woman who meets in Jesus one who truly loves. I was saying on Thursday, for me, the most compassionate act I read in the whole of Scripture is when Jesus, confronted with this mob, shouting, "The law says we should stone her. What do you say, Jesus?" And what he does is he bends down and he begins to write on the floor. When you say it just like that, you wonder, well, where's compassion? And yet, I just see that whole crowd shouting against this woman, all of a sudden having their attention diverted as they look to see what Jesus is doing. What's he writing? What's going on? And in that moment, their hostile gaze is taken away from that woman. She's given some space, some time maybe to somehow pull herself together or pull the clothes around her to cover her body. And although that doesn't last for long, the compassion continues. For Jesus reminds each and every one of us, as he did all of those people in that crowd, that we need to know and look at ourselves, at our lives. What is it that we have done that we might be ashamed of, that we might be sorry for, that we might also be stood in front of the crowd who are baying for our death or judgment over us? And one by one they go away and they leave that woman. I want to know the rest of that story, really. I want to know what that woman did for the rest of her life. But I'm certain that she was not left unchanged by that whole thing, by the meeting Jesus, the one who showed such compassion, who showed a love which is not manipulative, which is not self-seeking, but wants the best for all. So Let Love Be Real is a hymn I would always commend to people to read about the nature of love. Finally, I just want to read another poem called Conspiracy of Silence, because I think there is a real danger, isn't there, that people are silent about what they go through in their lives. And I have a belief in a church which is a community where people can be honest with each other, where people should be able to be open with each other to find the care, the support, the comfort that they need. Too many times, I think people come in through our doors of our community with pains that they are bearing, which they hide because of the shame they might feel, for the vulnerability that they don't want to show. And I believe that our communities should be a place where we can be vulnerable in safety, a place where all can come and find sanctuary, safety. Conspiracy of silence. Fear is a debilitating presence. What will happen? When will he do it again? How will I cope? Much the same as usual. You don't see the issues. You don't hear the questions. Must I forgive him? He's a child of God, like me. Should I stay with him? I promised to and meant it. Can I speak of it to you? I can't be disloyal. So I stay locked into myself. Pain and loneliness writ large, gradually losing my trust, my hope. Will you be as Christ to me? Will you see with the eyes of truth? Will you hear with the ears of discernment? Will you speak out with the voice of challenge? Will you condemn the violence and abuse? Will you gently hold me, believe in me, and strengthen me? I need the freedom Christ brings, a liberating presence. A reminder there in that last line of that manifesto that Jesus speaks of in Nazareth, recorded in Luke. I have come to set people free. Surely, our call as disciples, followers of Jesus, is to be that kind of presence for others, that people can come and can share their fears and can share their pain and find in us a people who will hear, who will listen, who will care, who will help in the ways we can. May we truly be Christ's liberating presence in our community. Amen.